This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It's been a good week. The air conditioner is on. It's a little warm, but it's lovely. I like the warm. It's better than the cold. And it's certainly better than it was, last week. When I was in the Uncle Sam getup, it was fun. The Uncle Sam getup was fun. It was fun. Got to visit a bunch of friends. They laughed. We hooped. We hollered. It was fun. But it got a little warm by the time it was all said and done. Because I was in the heat, out of the heat, in the heat, out of the heat. I actually ended up at Panera at about 7:35 in the morning, did their rapid pickup thing where I ordered it ahead of time, swung by. So that was good. So then I took the bagels over to the friends. I told them I'd get the bagels, and then I ran back over to headquarters, saw some people at headquarters, saw a friend I didn't know I was going to see. I was going sneaking in, and she came popping out of a door. And she was grinning from ear to ear. She said, "You don't know how much joy this brings me." What's interesting, that reaction is very interesting to me. Because she thought it was so much fun. That reaction's very interesting to me. I mean, my friends that I took the bagels to, they had forgot it was Uncle Sam Day. And so when I walked in with my Uncle Sam costume, they were doubled over laughing and rejoicing and etc. etc. But that reaction is very interesting because I was talking to my friend that I wasn't expecting to see later, and she was saying that when I first got out of the car, she said, I was looking and I was like, who is that and what? Am I going to have to call the police? Noted, call the police. And then she said, you kind of turned around and I recognized it was you, and that's Phil. You know, so she went from call the police to you don't know how much joy this brings me. So it's fascinating. It's just really interesting. So obviously there's a safety context that needs to be had here. And so it was fun. So then I went from there. What came next? Oh, I went over, I think saw the doctor's office. One of my friends wasn't there. So then I went from there to shopping. And then after shopping, some other friends wanted to see. So I swung by and saw them. And then I went by church because there's a young lady who works on the maintenance crew. She wanted to see, so I went by there. And then I went grocery shopping and saw my friends there. And we hooked and we hollered. And then I came back through because there were some people at the MK office where I took the bagels. They weren't there when I got there first thing in the morning. So I went by to see them. And then I swung back by through and a couple of more people at headquarters. Went by the pharmacy, saw them, and then ended up at a little cafe down on Commercial Street. Had lunch with a friend there that was the culmination of a fast that I started at Tuesday night. So I'd gone from Tuesday night to 11 o'clock on Friday to do a little more extended fast that I like to do twice a year. And, of course, I had done all that in the heat, so I was ready to eat. I was ready to eat by Friday at noon. Had a really nice dinner with a friend there. He told me later, he said, yeah, he said, as we were walking out, he said, people were kind of looking at you. I said, I know. So when I make eye contact with people, I just smile, they smile, and then we're all fine. So it was fun. Uncle Sam was fun. It worked out well. Didn't get mugged. Yay! So it was fun. All is well at work. We're puttering along. Just keep trying to get more things done every day, you know, go in, do the best job I can do. The writing has finally loosened up. You know, I've been writing this book and I've been like, okay, I think this is the parable I'm supposed to use. But it just wasn't. I had no idea what the parable was supposed to mean. I didn't know. It's the parable of the wineskins, which is a difficult to interpret parable to begin with in the traditional sense, because the traditional interpretation of it has some problems. There's another interpretation that I was going to go with, but I just couldn't figure out how it was going to fit in the story. I was kind of limping along, but as I am wont to do, I just thought, well, you know, let's just keep plowing forward, and I'm sure it will open up at some point. So I was off work yesterday because of July the 4th, and I was plowing, and just I wasn't feeling it. It still wasn't, you know, wasn't the thing. And finally, I heard this little whisper, and it was like, you know, maybe you should look at the parable list again. Okay, so looked at the parable list, and like the first, I don't know, the first or second one, it was just like, boom. The kingdom of heaven is like a woman making bread, and she takes a little bit of yeast and kneads it, and it spreads through the whole dough. And I thought, there it is. And it just dropped into the storyline, and it's, there's a multiple applications, and all of a sudden I knew where we were supposed to do that. Yeah, just dropped in. So I think I know where I'm going in this book now. Yay! Because I'm up to 85,000 words, and these things are supposed to land someplace between 125 and 150. I like them to land about, you know, 130, 140. And I'm already on chapter 19, and there's usually only about 30 chapters, so got to kind of know where I'm going, but I think I've got a handle on it now, so yeah, it'll be fine. So anyway, so that's good. Yay. Okay, so writing Uncle Sam, my dad's doing well, everything's puttering along there, you know, he seems to be happy in his new place, and my beloved is making the push to box up stuff and get it taken care of there. So that's all going well. We're giving stuff away. You know, we're moving on to the next thing. That's all going. So good, 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 good. Today, not something that's entirely surprising, but had some nice observations. I came across an article called The Dopamine Economy, and I thought this guy summed up pretty well, pretty well as to what really the difference is. Because obviously the advertising industry has existed for some time. You know, the show Mad Men was all about the advertising industry. And certainly the advertising industry got a boost when this delivery of media came along. You know, we could trace this all the way back to Gutenberg with the press. And all of a sudden now we have more of a mass market type ability to reach multiples of people. Because now we can print newspapers. Then, of course, with the advent of radio, you know, that allowed us to reach more faster. Of course, television is more immediate, faster. But in all of those things, you're still dealing with a passive observer who is receiving things. You can switch stations, but you don't necessarily get exactly what you're looking for when you switch stations. You're not really close to control. And in this article, the author was talking about the fact that Mad Men, the advertising executives, created consumers, but how that now, the people who are engaging in products for us to use are creating algorithmic addicts, in his terminology. And the title of the article is The Dopamine Economy, which is true. So he says, you know, what have we really built today with all this technology? He said, at the root, if we go down to the essence of it, what is it? Every minute, every 30 seconds, update political scandal, update celebrity gossip, update outrage, update Black Friday starting early, trigger, surge, release, reward, whoosh, high, crash, repeat. Said, you felt it, I've felt it, so there's no need to deny it. That soaring adrenaline rush of finding a better deal, daytime pleasure. We've built a dopamine economy. It's profoundly addictive, deeply toxic for us both as people, society, as both people and societies, and it's high time to begin grappling with that. Okay, so, you know, a dopamine society, what does that look like? Well, people are desperately checking their smartphones hundreds of times a day. Fixated eyes, never leaving the screen. Always got to pick it up. See, you know, obsessively, compulsively spending more time in fantasy lands than with their families. Chasing the breathtaking adrenaline high of dopaminergic release. It's a model of what it means to be human, an institutional form, where people are desperately seeking even higher and quicker and sharper highs and find lower and harsher and darker lows. But is it good for us? You know, and where I have seen this clearly is in these little clickbait games where they have sound effects that sound just like you're in a Las Vegas casino. You know, line up these three jewels in a row. Bing, bing, bing. Oh, hey, boom, ting, 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 ting. You know, comes down all of those sounds to go, hey, good job, you made it. Great, great, great. So what's the goal of this whole game? To show you advertisings, get you to stick on the game more. Ding, 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 ding. Keep you distracted. Burn time. Make it to the next level. Gotta make it to the next level. And he said, a generation of marketers, technologists, venture capitalists, entrepreneurs, quasi-scientifical, using behavioral economics, neurobiology, and technology have addicted people to excitement. Whether it's titillation, outrage, or burning desire, because they found that people somehow could easily be triggered that way. They had unwittingly stumbled on the fight-flight response, dopamine-triggering adrenaline, which is what causes the breathtaking high of, say, a heroin addict. I mean, these are all the same subsystems that addict people. Ding, 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 ding. He says, so we reward people as if they were lab rats with tiny morsels of rewards, whether they're coupons, clickbait headlines, discounts, special offers, prizes, and so on. And somehow they always come back for more. Said, we don't really know why, and so we don't know what fire we're really playing with, that we're toying with the basics of human neurobiology itself, that every click's effect is something like a heroin injection, dopamine triggering adrenaline surging through the system. This dopaminergic, which is to say unidimensional approach to human potential, is a behavioralist approach to human potential, and it is a linear approach to human potential. The presumption is that through systematic rewards that trigger just one kind of experience over and over, fight, flight, adrenaline high, addictively, people can be trained to become what, precisely? I mean, what is the point of all this? You see people who have just got to keep checking Facebook to see what's going on.
see what their friends are doing, see what's happening, see what. People got to keep checking Twitter because there might be something else to see that's interesting. Constantly. So let's use Instagram and Facebook as a tiny case study. It says, now, of course, there are people who use them well, kindly, gently, but what really happens? You, the user, sees something. Moment. Impossibly glittering, an impossible, beautiful, rich, accomplished person. The dopamine crackles, you get your reward. Wow, how amazing and glamorous life can be. I'm checking the mail. But now something dangerous has happened, too. Your expectations have been set impossibly high, all the way to perfection, because the truth is that even those perfect people struggle with despair and misery and longing just like you. Why else would they be sharing their lives like that? They want your approval, your respect, your admiration. So you click, heart, share, and now the dopamine crackles for them too. Surges, they get their reward. And they have to be a little more perfect every time. Just as you have to end up a little more depressed every time. He says, what psychology might call a double infantile narcissistic regression. On the one side lies the people who need to be adored in perfect ways to feel loved at all, though we are all imperfect. And on the other lie people who suppose that only if they are perfect will they ever be worth anything at all? Both are flip sides of the narcissistic stage of babyhood, where a little child must feel he is the center of the universe in order to develop a sense of self. Not just self-esteem, but self, a sense that one exists, matters, hangs together. This dopamine we get from the web is now precisely the excitement a baby feels after being fed. So the dopamine economy is regressing us as people to an infantile state where we long to become the center of the universe instead of maturing, accepting, and seeing each other's fragility, which is exactly where genuine sanity, sanas, health, and a connected and whole relationship with being the world yourself begins. Now, you may think that's overstating it, but just ask yourself, when you are kind, gentle, loving, compassionate person, who really feels true? Is it when you're crackling with dopamine? No. Or when you are calm, silent, strong, and still? Your dopamine crackles when you are fighting or fleeing, and what addicts are addicted to is usually fleeing the pain and despair of living. But the adult must somehow learn that even in that pain and despair lies great beauty and happiness. Now, this was interesting. Is it any surprise that societies are regressing too when tech is creating algorithmic addicts stuck in infantile states, having counterfeit relationships, not, let's say, vibrant citizens, neighbors, and friends and institutions? Of course, I don't wish to say that the dopamine economy is the only reason societies are going backwards. But I think he's got a point. I think that may be part of what's going on. So it's a really interesting article, and he doesn't actually come to any conclusions as to what we should do about it. But honestly, after I read that article, I was like, you know, there's a lot of times I do just head out to Facebook because I've got a couple of minutes to kill, and I don't necessarily find anything. I mean, I wish people happy birthdays, and I tell people I'm praying for them when they're going through some stuff, so, you know, I'll probably here and there, but I've been trying to get into work a little earlier, and I found that one of the things that gets in the way of my getting to work a little earlier is that I'm checking the news, I'm checking Facebook, you know, I'll burn up an extra 10, 15 minutes there, and then all of a sudden I'm not there at 7:45, I'm there at 8:00. And I want to get there at 7:45 because I'm going to put in 8.5 hours, leave at 4:15, get over to my dad's about 4:30, have 20 minutes to talk to him before he gets some supper. So I've been kind of leaning back after reading this article because he's right. All of this is just ding, 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 ding. And you know what? We can just lean back from that. One of the things I really do love is when I go out for a run, I don't even take headphones with me. I just take my watch now because it functions as a standalone device because it's got LTE in it. It's a Samsung Gear S3. And it's just me and the run, and it's quiet. And there is nothing but nature. And that's really good. And when I'm writing, it's just me and it's quiet. There's no ding, 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 ding. The high that I'm getting for that is seeing things be cloudy, 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 and then all of a sudden, boom! Hey, there, it just opened up. Yes! Get a little rush from that, I can tell you for sure. So, word to the wise. Back away from the ding, 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 and your life will probably be better. Even Facebook acknowledges this. And even Facebook, or I think it's Facebook, they're talking about putting in timers to tell you how long you've been surfing. And maybe you need to put this down and walk away. When a company that makes its living by snaring you into the ding, 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 ding is getting ready to put on a timer to tell you to stop it and shut it off, you know something is afoot. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.